deed has military value.
Yep.
You have to think of it in those terms. So when we're talking about vaccine campaigns and things now, we should think of this as being a military operation, because it is. And the people who are at the top of these establishments are very heavily invested in this financially. They have a lot at stake. There's an organization called BARDA, B-A-R-D-A. This is one of the pandemic organizations that's interfacing with the WHO and the CDC. The man who is in charge of this organization, his name is Robin Robinson, and he himself has developed 30 vaccines. So, you know, these are people who are making the decisions on whether or not we should have vaccines.
Well, that, yes, and what is that? The Bio Advanced Research Development Authority, BARDA.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, so the people with the most to gain are making the decisions about how this is going to go.
Hmm.
And you know, I don't think we're innocent of that or ignorant of that, but... you know, we're at this point where we really need to deal with this. Because we face possibly having this reenactment, you might call it, of the 1918 Spanish flu. So this could be a turning point for us. We've lost so many of our rights. We have non-elected, non-governmental, international agencies in charge of you know, our whole planetary plan to deal with this situation. And this just seems to me such an amazing opportunistic time for the global agenda, the depopulation, whatever it is they want, the takeover of resources, you know, the changing of our whole economic system, the unifying of policy. This is it. I mean, this has all that potential to be that. And, you know,
well, you know what it also means, Jenny, though, what I find, it also is the easiest way for them to get compliance from a frightened populace. All you need to do is there's such little public knowledge about health and about human longevity and the way we live our lives that they've kept this a kind of a closed secret. So we all walk around having to accept from up above the analysis that they give us, and if it comes back that we're in trouble, everybody runs around like their hair's on fire, Chicken Little, the sky's falling, and you are almost willingly marching into their hands.
Yes. Well, that's what they want. That's it.
Because they can take over without firing a shot.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I'm making a joke here. They won't do it without giving you a shot, but they'll do it without firing one, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, bioterrorism must be probably one of the things that, you know, if we were to think of modern stealth, that would scare more people than anything else, because it is the enemy that you don't see.
Yep.
That's the truth. So, that's my field, Daryl. That's what interests me. And, you know, to that end, I'm reading journals and I'm learning history and I'm trying to really get a grip on what's been going on. And I believe that influenza virus, polio virus, and innumerable viruses to come are potentially modern creations that have resulted from experimentation in labs, using chemicals and using X-rays and other forms of radiation. So I think it fits very neatly into what was, you know, really advertised as the agenda of the last century, when people like Edward Mandel House, who was a very close associate to Woodrow Wilson, it's been said that he made a statement that through the use of the law, that we would come to a point in time when we would have to register ourselves biologically that our biology would be property, and that the elites were going to own us, and they were going to own biology, essentially. And they really do at this point. They've been very successful at brainwashing us to be afraid of disease, and been very effective also through other organizations like the American Medical Association at just silencing their detractors. You know, people who have come up with alternative kinds of therapy and treatment and revelations about, you know, how we really function, what our biology is about. They've just, you know, been thugs in this way of executing people and suppressing them and, you know, just destroying them in the media and the press.
Well, now, let me ask you this. Where we are today with this, you're noticing at least a larger group of interested adherence to this research. In other words, more and more people are aware that what's coming out of the back of these airplanes is not contrails. And in some instances it is contrails, but oftentimes it's not. And more people are becoming aware that vaccines are dangerous. And in fact, they asked recently, well, actually under Bush, for everybody to take a vaccine during this, there was an anthrax scare, and they wanted everybody to get vaccinated, and everybody in the medical profession said, "We're not doing it. We're not doing it." Now, if the medical profession thought that it was going to benefit them, they would have never said, "We're not doing that." But they clearly knew that whatever they were going to be taken by an injection was not good for them, and they weren't interested. And my point is that there is a groundswell in certain quarters of what is happening. And are you noticing that as your research goes forward, or are you seeing that more and more people are awakening? Because I see you've named people like Dr. Mercola, and I've talked about Dr. Cannell, about vitamin D, and so many of these other suppressed informations. And it seems like more and more people are waking up to the facts, and at least at some level.
It does. It seems like it, and I certainly hope that that's the case. But, you know, unless we can actually have an effect on our legal system, then it's not worth very much. You know, I mean, this should just be a springboard for us to take action, and action we need to take. So, you know, waking up and being educated is just part of this. This has to be motivating enough for us to actually deal with this in a legal way, in a public way, and have it have effect. So,
well, you know, Jen, it's interesting. Here is where I see our greatest growth potential for adherence to the truth. There is a large swath of the world's population, especially the Western world, who are at some level decently educated, which in itself does not mean that they're going to come to the truth in any way, because frankly, in some instances, better educated means better indoctrinated. But at the same time, once they become disillusioned with what they see, and they go through that cognitive dissonance where they have to start justifying the difference between what they're witnessing and what they've learned, and they also see their nest eggs being stolen, and their house being foreclosed, and their children's college fund disappearing, and their health diminishing, and the planes flying overhead, and the civil liberties disappearing. They finally, it's because, and oftentimes it's only because their back is against the wall, finally begin to face the truth about what they're seeing. And this is a potential danger for this ruling elite, in my view, because these people still have access to resources. You see, the reason why they want to destroy the middle class and make us all poor is because a poverty-stricken populace can't revolt. But a middle-class populace with resources can.
Yes, but historically, middle-class people with resources are not revolutionary.
No, but they participate when the chips are down. They're the ones who pony up the resources.
Well, I don't know about that. You know, I'll just take your word for that now.
Well, I'm thinking, you know, here I'm watching, I mean, we're seeing more and better educated people arriving at this, for example, I'm talking to a guy recently, he's a financial analyst and planner, giving people planning advice about their money, and he, 6 months ago, he had to go and call up everybody and tell them that he screwed up. He was getting them into property purchasing in Spain and stuff. That didn't work out very well. We're talking about a 70% drop in land values and property values in Spain. And I talked to him, and the guy honestly was trying to do the best job for his clients, and he found out that he was listening to the wrong people. Well, let me tell you that this man was a fertile ground for the seeds of truth. And his anger was palpable. You could taste his eagerness to know, and the anger that underlined his new education. I'm gonna be honest with you. And the guy still has resources, and he's not gonna take it no more. Is my point. And I saw this, and I said to myself, is this unique, or is this the response we can expect from a lot of people like him? And I thought to myself, clearly, we're finding it true now that the middle class, after having been so battered by this nonsense, they're angry. And they're angry enough to want to do something about it. And you can see this happening, especially in Britain. Very, very big groundswell right now. They're demanding, Jennifer, right now, that 7-7 truth be reinvestigated because they've seen through the lie of 7-7. I'm not trying to get off subject here. My point is that I see a groundswell. What do you see coming with the food side of this and the vaccine side of this on the heels of this latest flu epidemic? Because I see this flu epidemic having a truly disastrous potential in for all of us.
Well, yeah, I think we're sort of involved in a beat the clock game with the flu. You know, unfortunately, the flu pandemic is already here in the sense that, you know, from every legal standpoint, it exists. And at any time, something can happen, like borders can be closed, transportation can be shut down, public venues can be closed. We're already there in every legal way.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. You know, normally I'm pretty optimistic about how we can deal with this as individuals, but, you know, as far as the rest of this goes, I don't feel optimistic about this, though. You know, I think that they're continuing a plan to have this mimic the 1918 flu, and that the best thing that I feel that I can do in this situation is really help point out where this medicine has gone corrupt and deal with the science, deal with the actual machinations of politics and law when it comes to medicine, and just highlight what's already happened in the past and show these patterns, here they are again, and point that out to people. I don't know what's going to happen. I know that as far as organic farming and things like that, we're looking at incredibly oppressive laws coming. You know, they've either begun these or they're poised to be passed as legislation, trying to force people to use pesticides, things like that. Now, pesticides were empirically proven to cause polio and neurological diseases back in the early 50s, and yet we have a government that wants to impose, you know, on us that we have to use these, and they're using the idea of, you know, pandemic plant disease as their excuse to force people to do that. So this is insane. what's happening. We're looking at very insane things being done at the moment. So very hard for me to pull up with some optimism facing things like that. It's not a reach that I can make at this point. I just really want to deal with this in a practical way and say, you know, this is what we can do to help us take care of ourselves. We need to pass this information around. It's time to get moving.
Mm.
And that's how I feel.
Late hour.
Very late hour. And we don't know if we can have a good effect. Even getting, 25% of the people to rally, to stand up. Is that going to be enough? There's just no way for me to know that. So I'm pretty much dispensing with, you know, having an emotional response to this and just trying to be very practical and deal with this, as a matter of sharing. You know, when the Titanic is sinking and there's bodies in the water and some of them are alive, you know, you just start plucking people out of the water and you get as many people into the lifeboats as you can. And I think that maybe that's where we are. I don't know. But, you know, for each other, I think at this point, we should just think about that. You know, that we're in the lifeboats and we're just going to pull as many people in as we possibly can.
Well, you know, you and I have known each other for forever. And the work that you've done over time, you brought yourself to these ends by life experience and then, of course, by research. One of the things I want you to address with me, it's an off issue here. I'm often described by my opponents as a Zionist and as a Jew.
Mm.
And as a working for the criminal Jews, Jennifer. Now, it's very difficult, you know, when you've got large numbers. See, one of the things that the internet does that's not very positive is anybody who lies about someone else, it stays there forever. There are lies that were placed on the internet about me 5 years ago that are still there for people, and they'll leave. Some of them will even pop up first when you research my name. In other words, there's a body of disinformation regarding who I am and the work I've done. Now, you having known me is longer than just about anybody that I've ever worked with. How do I face this? I mean, it's a nonsense. You know, it's pretty clear that people can research my brother, who is openly fighting this battle with me. We don't work together, but he does the same kind of fighting and does a public access television show in Rhode Island, and he has been for years working with Rick Adams. You've been on Rick's show. What is your words to the listeners? There's going to be tens of thousands of them listening to this. What is your word for when it comes to me and the work I've done and your knowledge of who I am, Jennifer? Now, that's a tough question to lay on you, but...
I think ultimately, you know, it's our actions that testify to our integrity. And, you know, the actions that I see from you, I've seen your website presentation change. I've seen even the nature of the information that you're willing to give out change also. And you have, in your way, moved closer to what it really takes to validate a message. You know, you posted history books. You know, you've done all that you can to seek out verifiable events and, you know, and the weight of time and credibility and put this up as representing your message. You've certainly, you know, been advising me that as I post articles up to don't worry about, you know, whether or not people understand it. Just validate the research as much as you possibly can. And so I've taken this approach and, you know, attempted to back up everything that I've written with lots of references and resources. And I think this is just a testament to the integrity, at least, that I'm trying to bring to my project, you know, my article, my message, whenever I get a chance to speak. And I think ultimately this is what we have to represent ourselves. And You know, we all have some ability to discern, to listen with our minds and with our hearts, and to go with that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I've been doing that, listening to you. It's been inspirational for me to do it. It's inspirational for me what you do. And I certainly try and deal with this in the best way that I know how. And I think that there are a lot of good people who are doing the same. And I really do think that, you know, the reason why we have so many troubles is because our ability to discern information and the truth and integrity behind that information it has been one of the more corrupted things that's out
yep,
there.
Yep.
And, you know, for all the wonderful benefits of having the internet, and I wouldn't trade it for anything as far as a resource goes, you know, you just have to be very careful when you navigate your way through there. And, you know, I've been a very cautious speaker about these things because I understand that, you know, I have limitations here, not only with my, you know, time to seek out certain kinds of information, but within the information that I find. I mean, I need to follow, you know, every reference, every name, every date, every study, and make sure that this information has integrity. So it's only something that we can accomplish together. It's not anything that individuals, you know, can have too much weight put upon them. You know, it's amazing to me that people like Eustace Mullins, for example, have accomplished as much as he has, you know, given the time and that he spent. You know, I admire these people for having gone to source material. And I think that's the best thing that we all can do. We really need to, at least in some way, some part of this message that grabs you, go to the source material and take a look at it.
Well, that's where people go awry. They want everybody to feed it to them rather than to do the preparation themselves. And one of the reasons Eustace was so full of information, he was afforded the library of Ezra Pound. And Ezra Pound's information was some of the best in the world at the time in opposition to this crime network. And so Eustace had a great research source and was willing to do the digging.
Sure. But he spent years doing his digging. I mean, he spent years on end at the Library of Congress looking for original documents. You know, it's okay that we share this and feed it to each other, but, you know, you need to check on where you're getting that information from.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just a matter of time and energy. Some people dedicate themselves to this, but other people, you know, have good ideas, have good messages, but, you know, they may not have that time. So I think really, you know, what speaks to you again is how much source material are you availing out as your message? No.
Well, you brought up Edward Mendel House. They called him Colonel, but he wasn't. Who wrote Philip Drew, Administrator? And if you go to IamTheWitness.com, you'll find Philip Drew, Administrator available in its entirety on the front page, and you'll be able to read for yourself this narrative, this in French, roman. It's actually a story he tells, but in the story, interesting, this guy he tips his hand about so many parts of this crime network that it's frightening. And astonishing that that it was allowed to be printed and circulated. But you know, these are some of the pearls, some of the gifts we've been given by the bad guys. I'm sure many of these pearls they wish they could take back, but they're out in the public realm. You know, Nesta Webster's book is there, and Douglas Reed is there, and Smedley Butler is there, and you know, the works of these forerunners of to ours, Eustace Mullins' work is there, and Ezra Pound. We have these resources, and we need to use them as they were presented, not as someone describes them to you. This is the part that gets me nervous. See, I want people to listen to what I say about some of these issues, but then I want you to go and check my work. And there again, that requires you to do some of the heavy lifting as well. But what it does for me is it takes the burden of proof from me and shifts it to the source I got it from. And I got to tell you, there's no substitute for that. And yet, I still have people very unwilling to do that kind of work. It's painful. But the core adherence to the work that has been done on the French Connection over time is strong. And I think as a jumping off point for your work and for many others, including Mohamed Rafik's financial work, and of course Noel working with me as on a social level, working with social constructs from a forum over there at TIU, and you know, there's so many. Ken Parmiton, very, very wonderful interview I did with Ken. David Pidcock has interesting stuff to say, and he puts it through a filter of religion, but that's his take on the world, and certainly not for me to poo-poo the qualities of David's take on the world through his religious affiliations, because much of it is sourced out of historical documentation, especially about Napoleon and about some of this other stuff. And it's there for the reading. I've done the reading. I can't tell you the thousands and thousands of hours of reading I've done. You know, how many people in the world have read the you know, a Philip Drew administrator?
Yeah, good question.
I'm one of them, and I even reperused it last night. And fortunately, you asked me in a private call if I'd read it, and I said, "Well, yeah, I think I did." Well, you know, I restarted redoing it again. I said, "Oh yeah, I read this," and then I jumped a chapter. I said, "Oh yeah, I read this," and a lot of what I read is coming back to me. But over the last few years, I've just filled my brain with carton loads of books. And it, you know, I don't always get my regurgitated facts on the money, but that's because, you know what? You know, hey, I'm in my 50s. I'm losing a step here, you know.
Well, you know what? I'm sure what all that reading has done for you is has made your commitment very strong to be doing what you're doing. And it's the same with me. You know, it wasn't until I actually dug in and started reading studies and following up on these feelings that I had and pursuing ideas such as, you know, virus is not contagious. This is an idea that the alternative medical community has been putting forward, saying this is not the problem. So taking that, you know, taking up the gauntlet, as it were, and then actually looking into the studies to see how this is true, this has deepened my commitment to this process. And, you know, it enables me to write about it, of course, and speak about it. But, you know, this is only getting deeper. And, of course, it's really challenging then to try and present this material. But it's worth it. And, you know, when we look at the speed at which these oppressive measures are coming down, you know, we've had an amazing last decade of history in terms of events. You know, we're having a really compacted experience, I think. That means that we are playing the clock here in time. And looking back over, I would say from industrial times, you know, is when technology availed itself to be instrumental in bringing about this very, very long-standing agenda, which has been thousands of years in the making. But it's certainly being technologically enabled now. So when we think about things like chemtrails and what might be falling out of the sky that's making people sick, because it is making people sick, you know, we are in a new age of technological advancement that is working to the benefit of the elite.
Yeah.
So, yes, we have no more time as far as I'm concerned. What I know from medical studies is that when they use chemicals and irradiation to perform genetic experiments and actually case lab creatures, whether they were insects or animals or even us, through generational changes that occur from the kinds of exposures that we get on a regular basis, that by the fourth generation, most species are very ill. They have a high percentage of illness. Most of them then, at that point, can no longer reproduce. And in some cases, there were no more generations after four. And in other cases where, you know, there was a more moderated influence of this kind of assault, people or creatures just went on misproducing, that they had genetic defects, and that would not last for very more generations either. So at the volume at which we've been assaulted since World War II with chemicals in our environment, with radiation.
We're heading into our fourth generation now, is your point.
We're about that. And we are looking at chronic diseases at 50%, cancers at 50%, infertility, very high rates. In some countries, you know, amazing. We're there. We really are experiencing what was at that time projected to happen. So we're already there. We have to really face the truth of that at this point and understand that, you know, we have been genetically and chemically altered, and we are fighting for our survival.
Yeah, we are. Well, you know, Jennifer, we've gone over the hour. We've done an hour and 10 minutes, which is great. And as usual with all of our interviews, I want to invite you back very soon. I want you to pick a few things you want to discuss. We did a nice narrative style here today of interesting stuff, a lot of food for thought for a lot of people. Is there a particular book or a particular study or something specific that you would like the listeners to turn their attention to that will give them some more information about the crime gang or more information about how to do well in their own futures before we close the show out?
Yeah, I would recommend anything on his website. I think you've really got some great material there. And someone we mentioned, Reed Eustace Mullins. If they want to know specifically about the medical establishment and they haven't started digging into this, read a book called Murder by Injection.
Isn't that the one where he says out of 14,000 doctors, 12,000 graduated that year were Jewish?
I think so.
That is the most shocking statistic that was ever spoken to me. When you talk about 2% of the nation's population, that's a shocker.
Yeah. So we really need to come to terms with this mediating influence. Okay. When we talk about Jews taking jobs here in this establishment, just looking at that as a mediating influence. Because they were controllable by their Zionist handlers. That's the way I see it. And some of these people themselves were very much part of that establishment. So if they've got a really good job in that establishment, then they are suspect for being part of this. And that seems to be true. So.
Well, I'm going to call that a program here, Jennifer, and I want to thank you for spending this hour plus with French Connection listeners. We'll be putting this show up immediately, and I'm grateful that you were spending this time with us. Very, very grateful.
Thanks, Daryl. I appreciate it.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you know, much of what we discussed today is really a call to arms for everybody. I mean, this is not a time for you to be sitting on your laurels. It is a time for action, time for a substantive discussion with people you care about. You certainly have preparation should be well underway for all kinds of issues here, especially a reasonable food supply for future events, things to bolster your immune system. We've talked about them, Jennifer and I, in past shows. So too have we talked about them with Dr. Banks and many others. It's time for action. This is not a time for you to be just sitting and learning. It's a time for you to take what you've learned and go and make decisions that are going to structure survival for your loved ones and yourself. So until the next time, ladies and gentlemen, take care of your families, love them, and give them all you can so that they can be strong in the face of these problems, and until the next time, be well.